Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. Welcome to The Conscious Communicator. I'm Rusty, and I appreciate you being with us tonight. We had a guest planned, but hopefully she'll join us later. At this point, it's just going to be you and me talking tonight about communication and what that's all about. As always, you can call in 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, 877-489-6350 worldwide. Tonight I want to talk a little bit about my dog Jake. Been having some trouble with him lately, and it kind of points out the frustration that it has when you can't communicate. I've been going through a transition in my life, in the process of moving to the Bay Area, and have been leaving him alone on a regular basis. And he's been getting upset about it. He is not the least bit happy with the fact that I'm leaving two nights a week and going down to the city. And what he does is he tears up the house as a response to that. And it's really frustrating when you can't communicate with something that you love so much and try and let it know that it's going to be okay. And when you can't communicate and you can't get those things across, that's when we have some of the problems that we face and some of the issues that we talk about here on this show. You know, how do I get my partner or the person in my life or the person at work or whoever it happens to be on the same page as me, or at least that we can compromise and figure out a way to communicate that will allow us both to do what we need to do and move forward. And transition is hard. Change is hard. It stresses us out. You know, I know Jake's going through a huge stress in terms of me not being here all the time. Being alone in the house is something that he doesn't really want to do. But the reality is that change happens, and we have to deal with it. And I would love it if you would join me tonight to talk a little bit about some of your experiences when it comes to change and communication and how you've done that. I think the most important part is honesty, and honesty in the way that we communicate with ourselves, honesty in the way that we communicate with other people, and taking responsibility for our parts in those situations. I was talking to some parents tonight at a school that I work at, and they were concerned about a youngster, a sixth grader. Some of you might have heard about this. It was actually on the national news. He brought a pot brownie to school and gave it to fifth and sixth graders. And they found out about it. The kids got sick and were able to figure out what had happened and brought the mom in. And the mom was basically saying, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, what's my crime here? And in the state of California, to have a small amount of marijuana is not really a crime. It's pretty much a parking ticket at this point. But she didn't understand what had happened and how the breakdown in communication and how what it was going on in her house was affecting people all around her. And I think it's important as communicators that we realize that what we do has a huge impact on the world around us. Not only the way that we speak to it, but the way that we think about it. You know, how we think about things, how we go through the world, how we sit there and analyze the information as it comes to us, it goes through filters. You know, we assume that it comes straight into our eyes and we read it and it's true or it's not true, it's black or it's white. But the reality is that it goes through our brain, and during that period of time, it faces judgments and it faces past situations that we've run into, and that causes problems. And it causes issues in terms of how we interact with other people because we assume that they're on the same page that we are. You know, that mom assumed that smoking a little bit of pot or making some pot brownies was not that big of a deal, and truth be told, it probably wasn't until it got into the schools and became an issue not only for her child but for the children and the parents of other kids at that school. And so how we communicate is really essential, and it's something that we need to be aware of. Again, you can join me at any time, 888-228-4494 or 877-489-6350. We're talking about experiences in communication, how it works and how it doesn't work.
We have to go on.
And our guest tonight was going to be Sonia Barrett. We've had her on, tried to have her on the show before, but she wasn't available tonight to be on the show. To be on break, I think Sonia is with us, so she's going to join us in just a minute. So we'll be right back.
I think Peter Matheson said it best when he said, "Soon a child's clear eyes are clouded over by ideas, opinions, perceptions, and impressions. Simple free being becomes encrusted with the burdensome armor of ego. Not until years later does an instinct come that a vital sense of mystery has been lost. The sun glints through the pines and the heart is pierced in a moment of beauty and strange pain, like a memory of paradise. After that, we become seekers. Join me, seekers. The rest is still unwritten."
Welcome back, everybody. Our guest tonight is Sonia Barrett. Like many, has been a seeker of more expansive knowledge since childhood. Her curiosity and persistence has guided her to a greater understanding of the veils behind which collective consciousness is shrouded. Sonia was born in Jamaica, and at the age of 13, along with her parents, she moved to the U.S. She later attended Roosevelt University in Chicago and majored in voice, pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. Her curiosity of the journey led her to further studies in the science of the body and the process by which it is interwoven into the third-dimensional matrix, a matrix spiraling out into the infinite number of other matrices. Self-empowerment is the foundation of all that she shares. Dependency is not encouraged. Her layman understanding of quantum physics widens her ability to intercept the simultaneous nature of timelines. Sonia, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on your show.
I'd like to know, my first question is, what is the matrix?
Oh, what is the matrix? Well, the matrix, that word is used quite a bit, and I describe the matrix more so as a system. A system is basically a construct within which a process takes place, whatever that process may be. And, of course, there are some specific understandings or some specific formulas set forth then for the manner in which everything that unfolds in that system will operate. So from where we sit, reality, I guess Earth here is also viewed as a matrix, as a system. And then within that, of course, we have other levels then of what we would call the matrix, and that is more invisible because it's the manner in which our lives are guided, the structures in place by which we have been operating. But all planets are, you know, are in itself a system, all designed with specific atmospheric laws, gaseous laws by which life within the system, that system itself, will operate, will expand, will grow. What those experiences are based on, obviously, those specific laws. So the matrix is really a system itself.
It's a parameter, kind of where we operate mm-hmm. within the parameter of that structure.
Right, absolutely.
Now, you talk about redefining the dream. How did we get here in the first place? What is the, you know, I always find it interesting that we think of this place as being, you know, a place sometimes of, depending on what your viewpoint is, of a purpose of being to cleanse yourself, a place where we come to learn more, a place where we come. How did we get here in the first place? What is this place all about?
That's kind of a tough question.
Good.
That's kind of a tough question. I mean, in the sense of saying, how did we get here? Because it, you know, it requires so much more. I mean, to explain, you know, I can just say basically that, you know, we're in a cosmic game. And that's the way I view all of creation anyway, is it's a cosmic game, and a game from the standpoint of, creation, discovering more about all the possibilities that it could potentially be. So I think if we look at it from the perspective of energy unfolding and being molded into to all potentials, you know, all possibilities, we can then see ourselves as part of that and as being that very force itself, coming down what I call the ladder of time, obviously coming from the nothingness of time. So we're coming out of the what we would see as the void, or the subatomic realm then, you know, coming down the ladder of that and solidifying and taking part in the physical world, the world of matter. So,
isn't the definition of the ultimate understanding, though, that I mean, the word God is used oftentimes too loosely, I think, but the idea of infinite intelligence, infinite experience, infinite understanding, isn't that kind of denying that expression? If that existed, why did it then break itself into different realities so that it could find out more?
Well, because all that would exist then is just the idea of what the outcome is, but the experience itself has to take place. I mean, that's really ultimately what it is. Although all is known, technically all would then be known. The results would be known. But to have the actual process of that experience would need to occur. Otherwise, there would be no reason for anything to exist. Creation, it would be pointless. If nothing happened, if nothing unfolded, if you as a human being then, if you take it down to the minuscule level of thinking about yourself, if you just said, well, I know the outcome of everything, so I'm just going to sit here, what would be the point? Eventually, you just wouldn't even exist because creating is the process, creating and discovering and having the emotional experience as a human being, having the emotional experience of everything that you are interacting with and everything that you are bringing forth from your own private imagination is the joy of that. Otherwise, we could just look at it and go, okay, in our heads, we just go, okay, well, I see the outcome. And then you do nothing. So if we can think about it from that perspective, it's not a limiting sense by creation unfolding into the experience, into coming down in the illusion of being separate, in the illusion of fracturization. It's just part of the, you know, as they say, God is everything. So in order for God to be everything, then God has to be everything then, if we want to look at it that way. And this is the being everything. Remember now that human bodies are designed based on electrochemical impulses, which are emotions. So we process through feelings. We process through our emotions. That's where we acquire the data, the experience, the understanding of what it would be to do this particular thing over here. It's the emotions that come from that.
I've heard that one of the critiques about heaven would be the idea that if a human being actually went to heaven, that eventually it would get bored and want to come back to some reality where it could re-experience itself. So, I mean, if that's the case, then the ultimate existence of the idea of some sort of eternal connection with everything would kind of be not really the idea that you're talking about. You're saying that the experience is what it's all about, therefore the coming and going is part of the process.
Well, it's just an ongoing process of experiences, and I think that what happens is because this is the only experience that we're familiar with, that we can put our hands on, in the physical world and being part of this physical reality. It's very hard for us to imagine another level of experience that could occur outside of that. Perhaps when you are done with this particular theme or particular concept then, which is being a human being, to the most limiting degree possible, that could come to a close and you may evolve or expand into a greater level of experience. And I think that's how we don't have to look at it that way. That is the way that I have come to understand it, come to see it. It's a never-ending, as I said in the book, the boat never docks. So I'm not looking for a heaven where I'm going and I'm just going to, relax and kick back all day. I'm looking at an evolution in my awareness, in an expansion. I'm continuing to expand. And in that expansion, all that I'm doing is I am taking on more and more of who we really are, ultimately in the bigger scheme of things. You're taking more and more of that consciousness. You're pulling more and more of it. We could go into grander levels of it, but I think that's kind of the basic premise.
When you say who we really are, who are we?
We are creation. I mean, we're everything. If everything is made up of everything. Everything is that's basic science is making that known, whether they're saying it in that format or not. But, if everything is made up of subatomic particles, we are ultimately everything. We're just different. Exactly. Well, we're just different formulas. Everything is a frequency pattern. So if everything is a frequency pattern, that means that it is based on a specific formula that of energy, some sort of quantitative value to allow that particular shape, format, structure to exist in the form that it does, but it doesn't mean that it's separate from everything else. So I think that's a good way, I think, to begin to look at that. We've just been taught to look at everything as being outside of us.
After I got done reading your book, the first thing I did was I bought a tape series about Einstein, and I've been listening to it pretty much nonstop since I read the book and trying to get more of a sense of quantum mechanics and quantum physics and some of the stuff that he talked about. And, his real struggle at the end was the idea of the randomness of everything, and mm-hmm. he really struggled with that there wasn't some sort of a purpose. And how do you talk about your layman's understanding of quantum physics. How do you deal with the idea of the uncertainty principle and some of the things that have come out of that?
You mean in the sense of things just happening randomly?
Yeah, I mean, he was very frustrated with the idea that it was random, that he couldn't find a unifying principle and that it appeared to be random.
Well, I think that since Einstein, I think with that concept, I think that people, even science is starting to look a little bit deeper. And I think we have to understand, too, when you are also operating, sometimes scientists operate within a box, even though at the same time they're expansive. Just to get back to your question in a second, but Bruce Cathay, who wrote the book, Harmonic, I think, of Time. I hope I said the right title. But anyway,
what's his name?
Bruce Cathay.
How do you spell his last name?
C-A-T-H-I-E, I believe. And he goes into some phenomenal things, discoveries in terms of, you know, the harmonics of the planetary grid. Just amazing stuff. But he
the harmonic
never
quest
went,
of space.
Okay. Well, he's got about three books. And, he's not a trained scientist. He didn't go to college. And he said, you know, I'm so glad I didn't. So I think we have to remember that a lot of times people who don't have the training of traditional schooling puts things in a particular in a package to some degree, even though there is latitude to it, but there's also limitations to it. People wait to be sure that things fit in to what's been said that it should be able to operate within, and so that could drive someone crazy as well. For myself, I have seen that my own interaction, then my own testing, bringing about something, you know, creating something in my life, regulating something, has allowed me to see that that's not really random. As quantum physics has noted, it's you, the observer, that is affecting what's out there. You're affecting reality. You're affecting it by your very thought, because we're talking about what? Streams of energy. We're talking about bandwidth. We're taking it to that level. So you are affecting everything. So if you are affecting everything, then randomness becomes really interesting. The whole idea of something being random, if you're affecting it, you're creating and causing things to happen all about you without even realizing it, without even knowing that's what you're doing. But if you're able to come into a space where you're testing this yourself on a more of a regular basis, and you're seeing how you can actually cause something to happen, regardless of what it is. You start out on a minuscule level in terms of what you may bring about in your own life. That is not a random act. That is you putting your own intention or your own energy into affecting the quantum field itself. You're impacting on those, you know, the protons, those neutrons, electrons. You're affecting the subatomic field. In general,
the experimenter is affecting the experiment, just like the idea of the light experiment. Whether you expect it to come in a particle or expect it to come in a wave, it comes the way that you expect it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So, what does that mean for us? What does it mean for the day-to-day person that's out there? Is the realization that consciousness affects the very existence that we have? And then the second question on that would be: then, what is consciousness? Because you had talked about emotionality, and I'm somewhat of a cognitive behavioralist, and I tend to think that thoughts create feelings, and there are some basic emotionalities that we share with all creatures. And I was talking about my dog before you came on, because I'm frustrated with him right now, but he's definitely frustrated with me, and there are some emotions that we experience. But the idea of consciousness being thinking as opposed to pure emotion, what's your sense of what consciousness is? I mean, it's an evolving thing. What is it?
Well, my sense of what consciousness is, what's my sense of what consciousness is? I see consciousness as, on a vast scale, sort of like the greater mind. But although I'm saying consciousness as the central point mind, that central point, or that one mind, then, or we can even take that to the level of the void, then, that one mind in the fracturization process of being everything, then, of being the illusion of being fractured itself. Us as human beings, take on a minuscule aspect of that consciousness. So we're all holding a small piece of that greater mind within us. We're all holding a small piece of that.
And defined as like our personality.
Well, it's in the format of many things, but on because we are only holding a small piece, right? We each then are given an opportunity to harness a greater and a larger and larger pieces of that whole. Then you're getting larger and larger pieces, which is what we then see as raising our vibration, or raising the vibration of our consciousness. That's what we're talking about. We're harnessing more and more of the larger picture of the greater mind. But on a smaller level, for the unaware and for those of us in just, you know, living our regular lives with our packaged concept of spirituality and packaged concept of life that's been handed to us, and we've been living that, then we are operating absolutely from a very minuscule aspect, and we are then only operating based on what? Personality. We're operating basing on our personalities, as opposed to operating based on what? Based on that part of us, that greater part of us that's inside, that stays connected with the bigger picture, with the whole, with the void, with the non-fractured aspect of creation. And that's what religion, that's what spirituality, that's what the yogis, you know, that's what they're all working at, is harnessing more of that that power. Kind of like, you know, like the atom, where, you know, it's the nucleus is the compressed what should I say, force then of energy is within that. Or in alchemy, where the what they're looking for is what they call the philosopher's stone, which is extracting the spirit then, the life force, the essence out of that plant or whatever it is we're talking about. We're extracting that part of it. That's the part that we are all trying to go back to. The pyramid, the fire within, as the pyramid is referred to, the fire within, or was it fire within or central fire? But we are wanting to go back to harnessing that. So that's the objective, is to acquire more of that, and acquiring more of that then causes one to begin to raise your consciousness, go into higher vibration of your consciousness, which then changes your physical life overall. It's not so external anymore as you begin to remember more of what creation really is.
And you talk about memory journeys, and you talk about the idea of being able to help people with that. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about what that's all about?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. I heard you.
I was reading in there, you're talking about the memory journeys or the memory lectures in terms of helping people to reawaken the memories.
Well, memory lectures. I call it memory lectures because I sort of got tired of the workshop thing. You know, everybody was doing a workshop. And I really wanted it to be where I was saying to people, I'm really reminding you as far as what I remember up until this, you know, at this point in my life. So I'm saying to you, I'm not really, I'm not above you. I am not greater than you. I'm not really teaching you. That was my feeling of how I wanted it to come across. I didn't want to feel like that. I wanted to feel as if I was really sharing in a process with the people that would come to these memory lectures, and whatever I am saying was helping to stir their own memory, to reawaken that which is already encoded in them, in their cells, in their DNA, and just bring that memory, begin to bring that memory up to the forefront. And that's basically what happens. I mean, in terms of the people that that have read the book, or the people that that send me emails, and it's nothing I'm doing. I simply put together some words in the sense of what I remember in my process up until this moment, as I'm continuously acquiring more more knowledge, more memory, and they're stirred. Something stirs in them, and they go, "I got it," and then they begin to soar on their own. So I'm all about people becoming more empowered, not anybody having to take, you know, come to me 10 and 15 times and be attached to me or anybody else. So I'm really not about the guru thing because with anybody, not myself, because I'm nobody to be guru'd. But I really see that people need to really be able to step up to that and begin to own themselves and not give themselves away, I think, as we've been taught to for such a long time, to somebody else creating a package of knowledge for us and say, here you go. And then we just accept that.
What are we missing? What is it that's out there that, I mean, from your experience and your memory lectures and what is it that we're missing, the average person that's walking the street? What are we not paying attention to?
Well, it's a touchy question, too, because when I say what are we missing, I really feel that everybody in every moment is really having their journey, is really living what they need to live right at this very moment. What I see, though, is there are people who are being to reawaken to something else, just scratching their head and going, you know what, I really feel like there's more. And I think that is the only moment when one can really say, okay, you know, I'm ready to acquire more. But for people just walking around out there, you can't wake anybody up, you can't make anybody see or do anything other than where they are at that moment, and if they really feel stirred to obtain more. So we are having the human experience, each of us, and each of our journeys are different. Each of our journeys are absolutely different in a sense of what we as an individual need to experience in this particular moment, this particular time, this particular timeline, all of that.
Now, I was reading some of the news from The Matrix on your website, which is spiritinformed.com, and it talks about Oprah's ugly secret and some of the criticisms about some of the snake oil mentality of this self-help movement that's out there, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that, some of the people that are out there trying to sell instant gratification and feeling good about yourself.
Well, you know... people are drawn to what they need at that moment, and I think that, again, we as human beings, most people prefer the easiest way out, and it is to have somebody give you step one and what appears to be step one, step two, and step three, because I get people asking me that. Yeah, no matter what, you know, you go through, they go, yeah, but how can I, they want a step one and step two and step three. And I think some of these people that are out there are giving people the step one, step two, and step three. And that I see that as a lot of times as a definite limitation, yet at the same time, that is obviously what that individual needs at that moment, so they're participating in that experience. I've seen ads where people are promising to get people through the ascension, to get people through this, to get people through that. And people are paying thousands of dollars. I'm not even exaggerating. People are paying thousands of dollars, for this. What I have to say is that, when we impose limitations on other people, not only do we limit other people, but we also limit our own growth and our own progression. So it goes both ways. And the people who are sometimes doing this might not necessarily also be aware, because, you know, in some cases, you know, there's greed involved, there's manipulation, there is ego. There's a lot of factors involved. And again, it's still also all a part of the game. So it just depends on what the individual needs, and for some of what I say, it might not be for everybody, because a lot of what I say, there is no fluffy, you know, from reading the book. There's no fluffy fantasy stuff in there. I'm not telling you anybody's coming to save you. I'm not channeling, you know, five or six different people for you that you get to sit down and you know, and select who you want me to channel for you. I'm not encouraging any of that. I'm encouraging the individual to return to themselves, and I'm giving it to you the way I went after it, because I didn't want any more of that fluffy stuff. So it's just up to the person. Some people are not ready to do that. That's owning yourself. That's a lot, because you have to let go of a lot, and some people aren't willing to do that. So give me the package. Some people say just, you know, sell me the package.
Give me an easy way out. It's like last week, our guest on last week, we're talking about that, you know, working on yourself doesn't work, and it was an interesting conversation, but it really came down to that whole thing of all you need to do is just let go, and everything
surrender.
Will take care of itself and so forth. And my experience has been more like yours. It's been about the realization and the difficulty of going, you know, two steps forward, one step back. You know, I see your picture on the internet, and a lot of people talk to me because I'm 45 years old and I'm still in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, ask me what the secret is, and I'm like, the secret is working on it a little bit over every day over a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to any sort of, you know, drop 30 pounds in 30 days kind of a routine.
Right.
As we come up to the new year,
temporary
that's what
fix.
People want. They want that,
yeah.
you know, hey, this is easy. And
yeah.
I just think that's bold. I mean, I really... Not only is it, but it goes back to your original point about experiences. If we're here to experience it, we're here to experience all of it, not just the
Absolutely.
Instant gratification piece,
mm-hmm.
but also the long-term, oh, man, I screwed that up, and I need to try harder
yeah,
on that
okay.
situation
right.
or whatever.
And it's okay. It's like just being able to go, okay, I did that, and I'm not going to beat myself up over it. Okay, I got it, and everything you've done has brought you to this moment. And to me, that's like the greatest thing when I looked at that. Because then I didn't have to spend my time judging and regretting. I just know what I wasn't going to do again. But at the same time, I look at what I learned from it and just said, okay, but all of the life, everything that I have lived have led to this moment. Because I wouldn't know any of what I know now. Excuse me. Had I not gone through all of those experiences. So that's
right.
what I see. It's all powerful. It's all absolutely powerful. And no, I didn't. I thought you were a lot younger than 45.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like I said, it's one of those things where people, you know, what's your secret? Well, your secret is that you do a little bit every day, and that there's, you know, there's things that happen and things that you're not, you know, I've been teaching anger management classes for the last 3 years, and I went to my counselor tonight because, as I was saying, I was talking about my dog Jake earlier today. Him and I have been fighting because I've been going out of town, and I hit him the other day. I spanked him. I was angry, and I spanked him, and I was so embarrassed by it. And he, you know, he was just kind of sitting there saying, you know, well, you made a mistake, and you need to realize that you made a mistake, and you need to move on and go forward. But
right.
you know, the reality that I was fixed, or that you know, there was something about me that was completely.
Yeah.
You know, I get
it's
really
jarring.
Frustrated with that idea that there is some quick and easy way to figure this out, because I don't think, number one, is that very interesting, but number two, is it very effective? You know, I just don't buy it.
I absolutely agree with you. I so agree with you, and people don't want to do that. People want what they've talked about. We're going to have 1,000 years of peace. But, you know, what is peace? Well, what I came to realize what peace was, peace is allowing the balance of all of it. That's really, you know, it's not me not having to stress about being good or bad, because ultimately when I can let go, I really won't have to worry about imposing really anything on anybody else. I'm not having to worry that I'm going to do something that is outside of, or what we would consider outside of. But I think it's taking the pressure off of ourselves. Just taking the pressure off of ourselves. And I think just doing that causes you to start going through this, whatever that transition is. And you don't have to force it. It's sort of like when people would say you have to, you know, love everyone and you have to forgive. And I don't know if you remember seeing that in the back of the book, but my whole thing was, You know, you don't have to do any of that, because people are forcing themselves to do it, and I think that it's something that starts to come naturally. When you go through a process where you get it and you come home to yourself and you're not so worried about everybody else out there and what they did to you, it doesn't matter whether somebody says, I'm sorry or not. And that was the feeling I got. And when I did that, guess what? I had more people, well, I didn't have a lot of people, but I had a couple of people who then, you know, came to me and said, gosh, I'm so sorry because of this, this, this. But it was okay because I really didn't have that at the forefront. I was busy focusing on me and not worrying about whether I have to love everyone. And a lot of people are saying that, let's just love everyone. And they're not loving everyone, whatever, you know, however we want to define that. But they're not. They're forcing themselves into a concept that they really can't really hold true to. If you really dig, and you know how that is, you think you let something go sometimes and something will come up and you realize you're still irritated with the person.
Yeah.
So we have to be true with ourselves and just be okay with it. You know?
Well, if you're talking about the idea that we're going to, you know, that this is an expansion of consciousness and the experience of everything, the reality is that the experience of everything includes some pretty negative experiences. I mean,
absolutely.
There's going to be times when you have to sit there and look yourself in the mirror and go, I screwed up. I made a mistake.
Absolutely.
I didn't do it right. Or, you know, and the idea that it's all going to be happy and it's going to be, you know, wow, man, this is great.
Absolutely. That's the thing that I had a time with. And, you know, of course, we know, well, that one film kind of came out there, and a lot of people just kind of fell off the wagon with that, fell off the bandwagon with that because they thought it was going to be a cure-all and just running out and just trying to acquire all this material stuff. And it was just crazy. And then people got really upset when they found that they couldn't really create, or some people even created things that made their lives miserable. You know?
My experience of goal setting has been, if I don't really have a good sense of who I am and I set goals for myself, I usually set goals that don't make me happy.
Exactly. You
know, I set goals that make me miserable. And I can remember, I was married for a short period of time, and I can remember being, you know, telling this person in with all sincerity that we're going to own a $1 billion house and we're going to do this and we're going to, you know, we're going to have all the money, we're going to have all the fame. And I really believed it at the time. And I was listening to, what's his name? God, Anthony Robbins. I was listening to all his tapes. Listening to all of his stuff. And I'm setting goals and I'm writing in my journal. I'm doing it. And I set all these goals and all these things came true. I bought a house, I got married, I did this, I did that, and I was miserable. And I had to ultimately acknowledge that to my partner, and she was like, well, I'm not really interested in you, and I could completely understand it because, you know, I had kind of built a house of cards there. But it was all based on this idea that if I set goals and I accomplished money and success and fame, that ultimately was going to feed me at some level. And what it ended up doing, more than anything, like you said, was, it brought me back to a greater realization of who I was. And when I had that aha moment and I said, oh, my God, you know, this isn't really me, unfortunately my partner was like, well, then I don't want to be with you. But, you know, ultimately that's the right decision. But it was interesting how setting goals and doing all these things without the idea of what it is that you're trying to, what is it that you're trying to accomplish?
What is the point? I mean, I think that's what it is. It's like, okay, so now I have all this stuff, because that's basically what you end up with, is all this stuff. You're going, okay, so now what? And I think that's the part there. People don't really know, other than the social codes and the social expectations and principles, say this is the measurement for success and failure.
Yeah,
and
you're happy.
We want to be successful based on these guidelines. And then when it doesn't happen, you know how many people are just feeling like crap because they don't meet those standards. They don't meet education, as far as education. You don't have, you know, a college degree. You don't meet that, so you're already feeling like a failure. You're irresponsible. I mean, all of these guidelines, you're not married by a certain time. You don't have any kids. It's just all these ridiculous guidelines that really most people live their lives, their whole lives based on. And then you get your 2-week vacation and, you know, you get your 401k. All these packaged, ideas, structured, get your 401k in. When none of that, actually, there is no such thing as security. All of that, as we can see, especially as we move into greater levels of technology, can all be yanked from us at just the, you know, click of a button. Somebody can go, guess what? It's not there, but I had it. Well, no, you don't, because we say you don't have any. So I think we have to really come to grips with what we call security. There's no such thing as security. Anything that's outside of you, there's no such thing. Anything that anybody else regulates, there's no such thing as security.
Right. I was talking to a guy tonight, you know, and I was sitting there, and he's asking what I did, and I was talking about some of the stuff I was doing, and I asked him, I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm in pharmaceutical sales. I said, how's that going? He goes, well, you know, I've been in it for 20 years. I make a lot of money, but to be honest with you, I'm not really happy. It's not the industry I want to be in. But there was no sense, but what he said, exactly what you said, it was like, but it pays me well, and it
mm-hmm.
gives me good benefits,
mm-hmm.
so therefore, I'm going to stick with it. And,
you know,
I could
benefits.
Tell when he was listening to me, and I'm talking about doing assemblies in elementary schools or doing a
mm-hmm.
website or doing a radio show or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at me like, wow, you know, that sounds like that might be fun,
but
there's no security in that. There's no way for me to do this. There's no way for me to do that. And I just,
nothing
there was a
solid.
Real, almost like a malaise. I mean, I don't know about the Matrix so much, but I do know what the eyes look like of people that live in it, and they're dead.
Absolutely, because they are operating by packages. They're operating by package concepts. I guarantee you, their days are repeat of the same thing. They're living on just a program of whatever life has been, you know, structured for them. They're doing that same thing like this guy for 20 years. It's secure. He's got good benefits. And the interesting part about all of that, people who are living those lives, it's actually sucking their life force. When people are asking you why you look so young, they're doing things that are actually sucking their life force. Little by little, it's sucking the life literally out of them. And that's
right.
why by the time they get to a certain age, they start breaking down, like this pharmaceutical guy probably, when he gets to a certain age, he buys into, because people that buy into that package usually buy into the package that by the time I reach a certain age, I'm going to start breaking down, which means you're going to start having to take some sort of medication for something. But you don't question it because it's the norm.
Right.
And so that's the thinking. That's the thinking. It's just packages of concepts of how to live a life. And it's not really organic. Somebody just hands you, here's your package for your life, for this life. Go ahead and live by that. And people go, okay. You know, so that's what
I'll take that, you know. And I think that, you know, my experience of growing up in an Irish Catholic household and watching, you know, my family and my parents and stuff like that, that was pretty much it, that this life was about suffering. It was about, you know, trying to overcome your weaknesses. It was about trying to establish yourself in some way, shape, or form and have a family or become a
mm-hmm.
priest or do whatever it is. And then, you know, eventually you go to a place that's better than this. And I always think, you know, I really, even at a very young age, thought, you know, I wonder if we're missing the point. I wonder if we're missing the point of this place what we're here to do and what the opportunity is here, because everybody was talking to me about the hereafter and the
yeah.
and this, that, and the other, but nobody was talking to me about the here and now. Nobody wanted to pay attention to that.
Yeah, it's almost like it's just a pass-through. It's like everybody is just sort of hanging out here because they have to, but they can't wait to get to the other side.
Right.
They don't even know what the other side is, but everybody, they can't wait. Well, right now, we're just in the drudgery of it. And the truth of it is, there is a point where you are able to come to where you are supposed to enjoy the game, the concept, the idea of being here in this giant Disneyland. And I know for some people they'll go, what? But there is a level of that, you know, when we really get it and we can step back and we can really laugh at ourselves and laugh at the whole concept, the whole idea, and then, you know, begin to enjoy it more. When I say enjoy, I'm talking about the tears and the joy. It's all of it. I mean, you know, you have yourself a good boo-hoo sometimes if you need to, and it's all part of it. I mean, I've had my moments where I've just been upset and just started, you know, crying about something, then I start laughing right in the middle of it because now I'm laughing at myself as to the ridiculousness of what I'm upset about. But I allowed myself to go ahead and be upset, and then I move on. You know.
I was talking to a buddy tonight. I went to his house for. He actually had seen his dog of 6 years get hit by a car, and he died right in front of him. And mm-hmm. he was talking about the loss and everything, and I mean, he cried. And it, you know, I remember I'd put a dog to sleep about 3 years ago, a very good friend of mine that had been with me for a while, and I remember mm-hmm. the tears coming out of my eyes. And as much as that was one of the most poignant things that had ever happened to me, and maybe guys are only capable of that when it comes to dogs, mm-hmm. I don't know. But it was the purest emotion that I ever experienced, and I don't regret it for a moment. I don't think, like, I wish it would have been different. And I got the same feeling from that guy tonight, mm-hmm. was that there wasn't any sense that he wanted it to be different, that he wanted the path to be different. He mm-hmm. he understood it, and he experienced the emotion. And one of the, you know, the critiques that men often get is that we're not in touch with our emotions, and I don't disagree with that. I think what it is that we tend to react to emotions as opposed to experiencing them, and I would encourage us to try and experience them more, because they are part of the path. They are, you know, they are very fluid. You know, people that are happy all the time, they scare me to death. I'm not really comfortable with people that are constantly happy.
Yeah, that makes me a little nervous too. And I always say one of the things that makes me nervous is the people that go, "I'm a good person." That always makes me very nervous.
Right.
Like, why do you have to say you're a good person?
Well, I've got to say that so everybody knows it.
And so it's like, okay, yeah, no. But it's just the ability to just go ahead and just be. And whatever it is you're being and feeling at that moment, just giving yourself permission to be that, because that's all part of the dance. You know, it's all part of it. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying, and as far as emotions are concerned, I mean, that's, you know, to be a human being, that's how we experience. And even though men may not get emotional per se in the sense of, you know, tears, crying, you know, as us women tend to, you still have emotions, you're still going through it, but in different ways. But the more that you can allow yourself in those moments, as you did, to have that experience, yes, the more freeing it is. You're not forcing it.
Do you have two boys?
Yes, I have two sons.
How are they doing? Have you been able to impart this wisdom on them?
Oh, yes, actually. And they're having to, of course, deal with, you know, with life here. But, yes, no, they got this information as I got it as they were growing. And, you know, they're in their 20s. They're 28 and 25. And, you know, one has two children. The older one has two children. And so he is learning. He's incorporating what he knows into, you know, his life. And so we talked about all of these things. You know, they'll call and they'll say, you know, this is what happened, and I get it, but, you know. So, yes, they know a lot more than I did, obviously, at their age. So I think that's powerful, and to be able to pass it on to the kids.
Are you going to be able to spend the holidays with them?
Oh, yes, I am, actually, because my older son, they just had another baby who is a month and a half old. His name is Justice, and then my older grandson, who's seven, I'm going to go and hang out with them. You know, they're not that far from me. They're in Oceanside, in California. So, I'm going to hang out with them and enjoy that, the baby and, you know, all of that.
So if we're going to give our listeners some ideas in terms of just kind of a starting point, in terms of this, I know the holographic canvas, I encourage people to read it. It's not an easy read by any stretch. I've worked my way through it. I know Sonia had spent a lot of time writing, and it is definitely something you got to sit down and pay attention to. I know the website, spiritinform.com. But if you had some ideas in terms of just like giving people, you know, kind of a New Year's start-off point, what are some things we can give them to start to think about, to become a little bit more open to their experience?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is fear is being packaged right now. And not to fall into that trap, because you can really lose yourself in that. Every time you turn on that television or get on the computer, it's fear, fear of the economy, fear of not having. So I think you have to reel yourself in on that, and you find yourself being addicted to wanting to listen to more about the demise, because that's what will happen. You'll start to feel addicted to that. You want to hear more, even though you're already, you know, nervous and stressed about it. You just got to hear more. So I think that you have to look at that and look at where you are and look at what things you can do for you. Be real with yourself about what your position is in your life right now. If you're worried about your finances, take a look at it. Look at what you can do for you, and not spend your time just waiting for the system or another individual to ensure, you know, your freedom. And think about those things that you might be passionate about. Maybe it's time to sink your teeth into something else. You've been doing something for 20 years or 15 or whatever, and you're tired of it. Pay attention to that, because that could be part of some of your health problems as well. When you're not happy, that will definitely impact on your body, because remember, emotions run the show. Emotions run your cells and your oxygen supply to your body. So that's what I would say.
I wondered about that with all the American auto workers, and I realize that this period of time with the bailout is probably very nervous to a lot of families in those situations, but I wonder if there's some of them there that are thinking to themselves, boy, there's something else I'd really rather do. You know, I know I'm making $50 an hour, $25 an hour, whatever, and it's a good living, but I wonder if there's also an opportunity just to open up their mind and say, you know, I've always wanted to make furniture. I've always wanted to whatever, you know.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah, look at it at maybe it's a time for you to step out, you know, step out and do something else. Because sometimes when there's an opportunity for you to step out and you don't, things fall apart around you, because so then it forces you to make a move, to do something grander. So look at that and pick up a copy of the Holographic Canvas. People usually read it 2 and 3 times, and you can get on my website. The testimonials are extremely real, not altered in any way. These are real people who have emailed me and have expressed their feelings on it from all over the world. And the website is packed with lots of information.
Yes, it is.
It's got a lot.
I encourage you to go there. And, Sonia, it's been a blast. You know, we tried to do this a couple months ago, and it didn't work out, but what a blast. I really appreciate you being on.
Thank you. I loved being on the show.
Have a great holiday, and to everybody out there, remember, man, we're on a process. We're on a journey. It's not something you're going to fix overnight. It's a process of opening up your mind a little bit every day. And here at the Conscious Communicator, that's what we try to do, is give you a little bit more insight, pat yourself on the back, give yourself credit for a week well done, and hopefully next week you'll have more insights about the journey going forward. Have a great holiday season. Don, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hi, my name is Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind, the voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday.